They're on the medicine show with Doc Bartok, my aunt.
And
I was born in 1940, in 1940 with the medicine show.
1940? And yeah. That, so you were, the first 10 years were on that show? Or?
I was on the show until I was about, well now, actually being on the show, see, us kids, we was put in boarding homes, in a boarding home, while they was out on the road, until school was out, and after school was out, then we go out on the road with them during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the show? Do you remember Doc Bartok's show pretty clearly? Or?
The medicine show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What are your first memories of it?
What I remember about the show is how they, the big top, it was always in a big top, you know, and they had a stage and the blackface clowns, you know, and the actors, mm-hmm. they would put all this chalk, coal soot dust. It was cork. And they would put on a show and everything, and he would sell medicine right off the stage, you know, with the butchers down front coming down. Right now, some of the Bardex medicine, I still take the mineral water with vitamin.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that it there? Yeah, I recognize it over there.
Over there in the side of the wall?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I still take that every day, mineral water.
Uh-huh.
With vitamin.
It's good.
It's good. Well, like Dr. Troop, my doctor, he said it, I asked him about it, and he said, that's good because it's got the minerals, and you drink that water, it's got all the minerals that you need, your body needs. And he said it with the deteriorating spine that I got, it helps build the calcium and everything up on the spine.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been taking it all along, Bardex medicine, mineral water.
I guess you were drinking it like mother's milk when you were a little baby.
No. When we was kids, we never took it.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you remember the acts that were in the show? Some of the, did you know the black comedians and?
I remember a black woman that used to be on the show when we was kids. She, man, every place she went, she took us kids with her.
Hattie Lou Mack?
Mackler or something like that. Yeah. That's been a long time ago, though.
Uh-huh.
And then the show itself, like I say, it's the comedians and dancers, different acts, you know, mm-hmm. in the show. And I remember my uncle, he would pitch that medicine.
Do you remember his pitching very well? Was it real impressive to you as a kid?
Nah.
And they would buy it. Seems like
yeah.
that was the biggest show, the biggest medicine show.
Medicine,
that was.
Yeah. People would dig in their shoes and everywhere else and get their money out.
Uh-huh.
For to buy that, well, mineral water and a little bit of everything that he had. See, there's some of that medicine that he used to pitch, the Federal Food and Drug Act come in effect, you know, and they was in and they cut him out from selling certain kind of medicines and stuff, uh-huh. like the Indian tonic, the liniment, that had the kerosene and all that stuff mixed.
Mm-hmm.
They put a stop to selling it. So he got out of the medicine show and then he went into the circus business. Mm-hmm. And but he made damn good money in the medicine show. He lost his tail in the circus.
Uh-huh.
You didn't make nothing in the circus.
Why do you think that is? The circus is just a hard business in this.
Well, there's no difference in setting up a medicine show than there was a circus.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing about a circus, you got performers in the, you know, in the arena, or recesses, the big top,
mm-hmm.
performing on a trapeze. You've got, well, we had the three rings, and then we had a European-style circus. There's no difference in a circus and a medicine show, except medicine show was what it was, a medicine show.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you go into town, you sell medicine. You put on the acts and everything, and then you sell the medicine. But a circus, as far as labor setting it up, no, there was no difference.
Mm-hmm. But you had different acts. I mean, you had.
Oh, yeah, it's completely different acts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
No, none of the same comedy was in the circus, was it?
No, huh? He did have a band player that, when he was with the medicine show, came over with the circus. I can't think of his name of.
Uh-huh.
That was a black guy. He was in the band. Is that recording now?
Yeah, it is. So what was your, were you involved, did they get you to do stuff in the medicine show at all?
No, not as kids in the medicine show, no.
How did you get started in pitching and carnivals?
With Bartok Circus. Yeah, Doc, he's the one that taught me everything about pitching and barking on the sideshows now. The only thing about pitching on the sideshow, the barker, what my uncle tried to teach me, or what I learned from him, he always used these big words, you know, $10 words. And myself, some of the words I didn't know what he was saying myself, you know. But me, I kind of changed things around. I wouldn't use them big words that he tried to teach me to say, you know. Because the people, the audience, I would say 80% of the people that comes to a circus, they don't know what the hell, especially the kids, you know. They don't know what mystify means, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the circus magician, the one that'll mystify the adults as well as the children. Mm-hmm. Kids don't know what the hell mystify means, you know. So I kind of went my way. Uh-huh. And after I went my way, I don't know. I got good at it anyways.
But then
you know Ward Hall.
Yeah,
Ward Hall's been trying to get me going to his show for 5-6 years.
Really? Yeah. Just as a talker out front?
Yeah. Pitch man out in front, valley man.
How come is your disability make it difficult for you to do that too?
Yeah, well, see, there's times that I get up in the morning, I can't even stand up straight. My back is all messed up. It'd be an hour before I can get up out of bed. It hurts so much. And then I got Percodon and Demerol, pain pills. And I know in 76, the last year I was out, I had a spell on my back. I ended up, and I don't even remember going off the fairgrounds, but they took me off the fairgrounds in Lancaster, Ohio. And they diagnosed it as a pinched nerve in my back. Mm-hmm. And that was my last year out on the road. Now after I come in off the road, I applied for SSI disability. And the doctors, one, Dr. Troop, Dr. Hollister, they're the one that told me to apply for it. And so I applied for it, and they gave it to me in December of 76. SSI disability.
So how old were you when Bartok first took you aside and said that you should become a pitchman?
Oh, hell. It was after I got out of service. In my 20s. Mm-hmm. Back in my 20s. Last year I worked on the circus was in 66. And I was the ringmaster and then the pitchman also on the sideshow. Uh-huh.
Was there a difference in the being a ringmaster and being the sideshow? Was it a different sort of thing that you did?
Yeah, it's different. Master of ceremonies, the ringmaster is in the big top, announcing the acts as they come in, you know. It's not really different to me. Mm-hmm. Pitching is pitching. Uh-huh. Barking, you know. Sideshow, the only thing is, a sideshow, you keep repeating the same thing over and over, uh-huh, what the acts are inside. But in the big top, you go through it two times a day, and two shows a day, and it's not the repeating of the, like, barking, mm-hmm, pitching.
Mm-hmm. Can you give a sample of what you do on the circus?
With the sideshow?
Yeah. Did you used to stand up when you did the...
Sideshow, yeah, I used to stand up, and you know, I walk up on the ballet, you know, platform, from the sideshow, and...
Well, can you go ahead and stand up. If that
doesn't no. You want me to go through just if I can remember everything now on these pitches. I would walk up on the ballet, take the microphone down, and look around at the audience, and people see me, you know, coming up on the ballet there. And I would start out with something like, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you here early this afternoon, I'm going to have a little free entertainment for you. So if you put one foot in front of the other one and step right down close to the platform, I'm going to bring an Inca Indian, a Chief High Tie, an Inca Indian from South America. Going too fast. Now, Chief High Tie, like I say, he's an Inca Indian from South America. That's an extinct tribe of Indians that exists in the world today. Now, Chief High Tie is going to give you a small demonstration. Chief, bring it on out here. He's going to give you a small demonstration how he sets his body on fire, how he eats the fire, how he blows the fire. But on the inside, Chief, come on up. That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, Chief Hightower. And then he would come up and then lighting his torches and blowing fire. And then when he goes off the stage, he would roll the torches down his chest, bare chest, and flames would just come off his chest, you know, and then he would turn and go down. And then I would say something like, now, ladies and gentlemen, that's just a small demonstration of what you'll see on the inside. But furthermore, you'll see the Torture King, the man that lays on a bed of nails and allows a 200 to 300 pound man stand on his chest while his back is embedded into the nails. You'll see the circus magician, the one that'll mystify the adults as well as the children. You'll see the Indian glass dancer, the man that dances on broken, jagged glass with no cuts and bruises to his feet. There's a lot of things you're going to see in here. Now, this sideshow is two shows in one. This is the menagerie show. That's where we have the animals. And then I would break in, tell them about the animals, the elephants and tigers and all that. And then I would go back in the barking, pitching the freaks, the fat lady, the fire eater, the sword swallower.
Well, how would you do that? Can you go through that, the way you would do it, the different freaks?
Well, I say freaks, little midget man. And the menagerie show consists of the we're going in menagerie
where all the wild
you'll see the 600 you'll see the 600 pound lady, the lady that was born at the age was born at the weight of 38 pounds. I don't remember all of it, you know. Like those people, like the heavy set woman, the fat woman, they was only on the circus for, I think, 2 months she was. But the ones that I remember is the Indian dancer, the ones I used to pitch is the high tie and the Indian fire eater and them kind of people. They was always there, you know.
How did you do the fire eater?
Fire eating act? Once they got inside the sideshow, they would do their own acts, you know.
Now, did you do a pitch for them on the outside?
The fire eater?
Yeah.
That's when I introduced Chief Hightower out as a fire eater.
Oh, he was the fire eater.
Yeah, Hightower, the guy comes out, lights the torches, and sets his body on fire. Well, that was a fire eater in there. Uh-huh. And that's how I introduced him. But then the rest of them, I would just tell and pitch and bark, telling the people what they're going to see inside. Mm-hmm. You know, the torture king, I would say, the man that lays on a bed of nails allows a 200 to 300 pound man to stand on his chest while his back is embedded into the nails. And then after the pitch of the barking of the sideshow, I would break it down. Like, I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, since there's a small group of you here, Louise, Sally, put away the adult tickets. Everyone's children at the circus. Everyone goes on the price of a child's ticket of only 50 cents. So hurry, 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 let's get your tickets over here with a Louise or Sally. Get your tickets now. Come to the circus sideshow, menagerie show, two shows for the price of a child ticket of only 50 cents.
That's good. You have a nice rhythm.
Well, I've been out of it for 3 or 4 years, pitching, even in the games, you know. See, I got away from the circus. I got into the carnival business.
And well, is there much pitching in the carnivals with the games? You just say the same thing over and over again, pretty much, right?
No, I say whatever comes to my mind. Mm-hmm. If I see a black guy, you know, a nigger walking down the midway with his woman, his wife, girlfriend, I might say, hey, you rock and roll, you take it as you go, you put it in your soul and give it to your hole before you get too damn old. You know, anything comes to me, that's what I say, and pretty soon the words that I would bring out would be in rhymes, you know, like teddy bear for your love affair, snake for your date, reptile for your mother-in-law, you even got a rat for your brat, and, you know. And a lot of times I would turn and grab one of these rats or grab a teddy bear and say, I got a teddy bear for your love affair. And I would scream across the midway, hey, here you go, buddy, bring your wife over. I don't care if it's your neighbor's wife, I ain't gonna tell on you, come here a minute. And of course I would embarrass people too, you know, guys like, they would be walking, you see them walking in circles around the fair, you know, and they just keep walking and finally I'd say something like, hey, here you go, buddy, hey. Pardon me, come here. Don't walk her to death, man. You got her out here. Spend a little money on her. And then he keeps on walking. I said, hey, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you don't win her one, I'm going to give her one. Sweetheart, come here a minute. And I'll reach over and get her a teddy bear, you know. Uh-huh. And she, if they come back, I would give it to them. But sooner or later, I'd get some money out of him to pay for it.
So that, did you have other ones for other types of people too? The you had one for black people walking up and down the Midway. Did you have one for fat people, or did you have?
No, I used to call them chicken farmers and hog sloppers, and I call people what I see. If it was a heavy person, I would say, "Hey, heavy duty, come here. I know you're a good sport. Come here, man." You know, yell across, "Hey, pardon me, you got your free one yet?" "Hey, I got," and then hold up a ticket, see? Well, the ticket is for the next game down. Now, if you take this down here, see the balloon game down there? When you finish here, you take this ticket down there, he'll give you a free game. See, that was a come on. So you go down there, now that guy's going to get you some money too, you know? There ain't nothing free in this world.
Did you ever do the attraction? What I always think of, the, you know, when you're taunting the crowd and insulting them and things like that, with about the, you know, the guy who sits on the platform and they try to knock him into the water.
No, you're talking about Bozo?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've never done anything like that. Mm-hmm. No. I imagine that if I was to get, you know, on, I could do it. Mm-hmm. There ain't a game out there on the road that I can't work. Mm-hmm. Now, I've worked like 40, 50, 60 games out there. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about from flat stores, alibis, down to the hanky panks. Mm-hmm. I worked a razzle dazzle, worked a pin store, count store, that's flat stores. Mm-hmm. I worked over the rail, that's an alibi. Mm-hmm. Six cat, that's an alibi. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a certain rap that you do different for each game, or?
Let's see, I used to say things like on the dart game, stick a card, 50 cents, one dart for 50 cents, stick any big giant card up there, you win your choice, you know. So I would say things like, "Hey, hit a card with a dart before you fart. Let's get one before it gets too damn dark." And you don't really, me, I don't talk to one individual. I don't care if he's walking by, the black man walking by with his wife, girlfriend. I don't just particularly talk to him. I talk and say it at him, and everybody around can hear it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd be up there, I'd be screaming anything to get that buck, get that money. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got to be king of the Midway out in the carnival. I was, I got some papers, write-ups and newspapers in there. Yeah, king of the Midway, born in a show tent, king of the Midway, a true carny. I got so many write-ups. I was on Don, up in Lima, Ohio, on Don Bratton's half-hour talk show up there. That was in Lima. But like I said, I got a lot of write-ups, a lot of publicity with television, even radio stations up in Ohio and Pennsylvania up in there. I was on them. How I get on them is they would come down to Midway taking these films, you know, of the fair and everything, and the other agents. All the carnies knew me as Crazy Jim, because my way I carried on. Just everybody, even Gibbtown here, everybody knows me as Crazy. Even the United States JCs, you notice on there, they put Crazy Jim lore on the certificate, the plaque. Everybody knows me as Crazy Jim, and that, I got that nickname as getting up there and getting crazy with the people. You know, calling them in and getting that money. I've seen times where. And, oh, I've had a lot of agents down the Midway be so damn pissed that they would just walk off from the game. They was yelling that I was robbing the people, I was taking their money, didn't give them a chance to get any of the money. I've had a lot of people who quit the show even. I had one, I went into Whitehall, Ohio. I was with Bob Keener at the time. And his granddaughter, Kathy, had a one dart game for 50 cents. 50 cents. Well, Doris and Chuck used to have a lucky spot pitch. They went and put a brand new game in, one dart for a quarter, not 50 cents, but a quarter. For 2 weeks, they ate her up. For two spots, they just tore her up. She didn't make no money. So Keener told me, Bob Keener told me, he says, "Jim, Kathy needs some help over there." He says, "Chuck, that goddamn Chuck and Doris went in there and put a one dart up against her and they run it for a quarter. You think you can go over there and help her out and put a build-up game in there on that dart game?" Well, we had about 3 weeks off there. I mean, that was in the spring. So I went over to Whitehall, and Kathy and her grandpa, well, they got together, and Bob told her, let him get in there and put a build-up game in there. Maybe they'll wake up down the line here. Talking about chucking doors. So I put the one dart game build-up in there. And that's where you got from a teddy bear, a small animal this size, to this size, to this size, different sizes, and then you go up to a 6-foot teddy bear. And to win that 6-foot teddy bear on my build-up, the way I run it, it would cost you $128 if you stood there for 50 cents each throw and each dart. It cost you $128 if you didn't miss one. Mm-hmm. If you missed one card, it would cost you $128.50. You follow me? Uh-huh. What it is, you throw darts at the cards and you win a small prize. Uh-huh. You trade two smalls for the medium. And then you trade two mediums for a large, two large for a capital, two capital for a giant, two giant for a super giant, two super giants for the super duper giant. Uh-huh. It was a buildup. Uh-huh. It's like, you work for me today for a penny, tomorrow 2 pennies, the next day 4 pennies. At the end of 30 days, it's $760,000 for 30 days' work because it doubles. Well, that's what the build-up game was. So I went over to Whitehall, and I put the one dart build-up game in there. And then we moved from Whitehall to Pomeroy, Ohio. And when we set up in Pomeroy, Ohio, Chuck and Doris told John Baker, the unit manager for Nolan Amusement Company, that either I go off the midway or they go. Well, at the time, we was Keener and the granddaughter with my game, the type of game I put in, she was throwing Baker a little extra money, you know, besides the under-the-table money, you know. So when they took Chuck and Doris told Baker this, well, Jane, John Baker's wife, was standing there, and Kathy and me, and Chuck said, he said, John, I've been an electrician on the show ever since I come over here. I've helped you, but we're not going to run our game, compete with something like he's got here. And he was talking about that build-up game. Whitehall, I tore him up. And they didn't make nothing.
Well, what were some of the, did you use certain taunts for people and rhymes that, did you use rhymes in that game too? To call the people over?
Whatever comes to my mind, you know. I mean, if I want to say, hey, son of a bitch, that comes to my mind, that's what I say. Hey, you chicken farmer, come here a minute. You see some guy walking down with food all over his shirt, and he got a pair of bibli, or, you know, overhauls or something. Hey, you hog slopper, come here a minute, you know. I take people and say things to them, what I see in them, you know. I don't care if the guy walk up the midway throwing his butt around and twisting his hands, you know, I take it and say, hey, sweetie, come here a minute. It'll be a guy, you know. That was me. I just say it as it comes, and it came natural.
You still have any of your games, or do you sell them all?
Well, I was under a lease contract. Bob Keener owned them, and I leased them from him. I paid him a percentage at the end of the year. And I don't have nothing now. No.
Did they used to have Bozos when you used to travel around? Was that a?
Oh yeah, yeah. Bozo, the Dunkem tank. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you know anybody who worked in it? Who did that?
Was I knew a couple guys. Now the original Bozo, he's old. I think he's dead now. The one that really was the original Bozo. Uh-huh. But.
What was his name?
Jack Bottomier or something like that. That he was one of the originals, you know, the old timers in it. But like I say, the Bozos now, they got agents, you know, people that would get up there, and I don't care, it could be some woman to sit up there, you know, and hey, you missed that when my grandma throws like that or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anybody liable to be sitting up there, you know? Yep. Might be the chief of police of the town. Uh-huh.
But they don't have
I used to use Bozo as a gimmick. People walk by, you know, a guy walked by, and I call him, hey, buddy, come here. Hey, you see that guy right there? That's Bozo, the guy's down the Dunkem tank. And then people would all look at him because Bozo would really cuss people and raise hell, and people got mad at him. And they would stand there and spend all that money throwing balls to duck him in that damn water. And this guy not even with the show, you know. But I was saying, hey, because he wouldn't pay no attention to me at the time. People walking by, I said, is that guy right there, the one in the striped shirt? That's Bozo from down there at the Dunkin' Tank. He'd look around, the guy look, come here, man. Hey, Bozo, come here. And he'd get mad. Well, gradually they keep walking around in circles, you know. And then I see him come by again. Hey, Bozo, come here. And they start laughing. The guys start laughing. Hey, what do you want, man? Come here, damn it. I know you're not Bozo, but I got your attention, didn't I? I might offer him a cigarette. You know, hey, how about a cigarette, man? And if I got a damn drink back behind the counter, I might give him a damn drink. Hey, do you drink? Yeah, okay, here, let's have a drink. Pretty soon, I'm going to get him for a few bucks anyhow, you know. But as far as talking about getting them for their money.
So were there a lot of rhymes that you used that just came to your head? Or you, your wife said you still do some of them around the house and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that some of the same ones? You got a rap for your mother-in-law? Or?
Yeah, some of them.
Do you ever hear other people do them?
Well, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of agents out there that would copy me. Uh-huh. I'd be listening to a guy down the Midway say, hey, I got a teddy bear for your love affair, and he couldn't say it right, and he didn't present himself right. It's less like the black man walking by with his wife. You can't just walk out there and say, hey, you rock and roll, take it as you go, put it in your soul, and give it to that hoe before you get old. You've got to say it where the man's not going to get mad at you. Hey, looky here. You rock and roll, take it as you go, and you be walk. You take it as you go, you put it in your soul, and you give it to your hoe before you get too demo. Now, I ain't talking shit, and I ain't talking jive. Come on in here and win her one damn time, you know, like that, you know. That came to me. Rhymes. Of course, I say that quite a bit. That would come, it's rhymes that I already knew, but it came just out, not even thinking about saying it, you know. Like the paper said one time, the call for calls that Mr. Lohr uses to get the people to come into his ring toss game must work, because he sure, the paper was standing there and they've seen, I got a big tip out here. So I would get out on in trailer game and I would climb out on the awning. I would see, that's another thing. I can do I used to be able to. I can't now, I ain't got no teeth. But I used to do a glass eating act. I've done that with the Bartok Circus. Unscrew a light bulb right out off the stage, lay it down, crack it, break it, and then start eating the glass, you know. Chew it up and swallow it and wash it down with some water. A lot of people think there was fake. No. Pin cushions, take the needles, run through my neck, through my eyelids, through my arms, the human pin cushion. I've done that myself, too.
With the glass eating act, how do you do that? You
just
how come you don't?
No, I can't do it now. I ain't got no teeth.
You just crunch the glass so small that it doesn't.
Yeah, you chew it up fine. What it feels like in your mouth is like if you took some sand, a little bit of pinch of sand, and throw it in your mouth. After you get done chewing this all up, well, you know, you can wash sand down. Well, the glass is so chewed up fine, it don't bother you anyway. It don't hurt you.
Did they ever quote your rhymes in the paper?
Oh, yeah. I've got some papers back here in the drawer somewhere back here that, like I say, the headlines, all big write-ups. Uh-huh. Born in a King of the Midway, born in a show tent. I've got so many.
Did you ever use that? Did you ever tell people you're King of the Midway?
Nah. No, I never. In conversations when, you know, between the carnies and me. See, Homer Deerwester was called the King of the Midway for, 10, 15, 12 years, something like that. And 5 years before I become the King of the Midway, I told Homer Deerwester I was going to take his title. And Homer Deerwester, I still say that man, he's still the King of the Midway. Well, that old man, he's 68, 69 years old. But that man is one hell of a hustler. He's one hell of an agent. He would see a guy coming down the Midway, and he'll have that man convinced that Homer Deerwester was in Korea War with the guy. And by the time the guy left Homer, the guy would be walking away and saying, damn, was I in Korean War or not? And this how type of what type of guy Homer Deer West was.
Would he yell across the Midway?
He would yell, scream. He'd walk clear across the Midway and grab him by the arm and pull him over. Hey, come here. I want to talk to you, man. God damn it. I know you. God damn it, I can't think of your name. I met you 2 or 3 years ago playing this same damn spot with the carnival. Well, I used to copy his things, too, doing the same thing.
Like what?
Hey, Billy. God damn, I can't remember your name. I don't even know the guy. I never seen the guy before. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't remember your name. Come here a minute. God damn. How the hell you doing? Reach out and shake his hand? Well, I got that from Homer. And there's a lot of carnies that call me Homer Jr. because some of the things that I would do, I copied off of Homer. I'd go walk across the Midway, leave my game, walk clear across, see some guy that might have walked clear past, you know, a couple times before. I might see him across there. I would walk over. And I might have yelled at him, you know, a couple times before as he walked by. I said something to him. I might walk way over there and grab him by the arm. Hey, come here. God damn it, you was over there a while ago. Now you're walking around in circles. Don't walk her to death. That's how I lost my old lady, man. You know, you brought her out here to the fair to walk her to death. Hell, you got her out here. Spend some money on her, man. Come on. And time I get done, they'd be laughing and everything. Hey, let's go see what he's got over here, you know. Well, that's his mistake, following me over there, because I'm going to get him. If I can get him for 30, 40, 50 bucks, I'm going to get it, you know. Or if I can get him for 100, I'm going to get it.
Is Homer still around?
Oh, yeah. He's up with, right now they're in Lebanon, Ohio, the county fair. Uh-huh. That's the first fair of the Ohio, yeah. They're in Lebanon. He's with Homer, Homer Deerwesters with Dominic Albanese, uh-huh. Concession. He's 68, 69 years old. And,
you still see any front talkers out with these side shows on the big carnivals?
The barkers now?
Are they using tape recorders or are they using barkers?
There is still a few pitch men, you know, barkers. Mm-hmm. But most of the shows, your grind shows, it's all on tape now.
Mm-hmm. Now, who makes the tapes, do you know?
Usually just the owner of the show, society show. Now, circus is different. They still got the barkers out there. Mm-hmm. Rex Williams, I mean, they still got barkers out there on the circus. But in the carnival, side shows, it's mostly all on tape. Even Bunny, my cousin, mm-hmm. when she took that Demons of the Deep show out, she taped everything. Mm-hmm. And then it was over constantly, over and over and over, the tape running, you know. It's like the killer rat. Oh, I used to get so damn mad at that damn thing. The guy would turn the microphone or speaker up so damn loud, you know, the tape. And that's all you hear. And especially if they're sitting right across.
Remember that killer rat rhyme?
Yeah, same thing over and over. I'll see the killer rat. And on the inside, you'll see the killer rat. From the Vietnam jungles, the killer rat, killer rat, killer rat. And it would repeat, killer rat, killer rat. You finally get up and you can't even talk to the people, you know. You go and tell, hey, turn that damn thing down a little bit, man. You turn it down a little bit, but then half hour later, he's got it blasting out again, you know. Killer rat, killer rat. I cut speakers one time in Chillicothe, Ohio, on that damn thing. When we're right after we closed.
Those are awful, those grinds. Yeah,
something like that, you know. Now, if it was a different pitch, dialects, but the same thing over and over. Killer rat, see the killer rat from Vietnam jungle. And all it was, it's a possum crossbreed with a damn rat.
Really?
That's what it is, killer rat is. It's a possum, big old possum.
Crossbred with a rat?
Yeah, damn possum and a big rat.
Did you used to do the opening for the circus? Was there a thing that you would do when the circus was starting?
The when you were ringmaster?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. It gives me great pleasure to present to you the new 1966 edition of the Bartok Circus. And now, ladies and gentlemen, to start our show off with, we have them ponderous pachyderms, the big ones, the Bartok elephants. And then the elephants would come storming in and get in the ring and do their act, you know. And then, while they're doing their act, you might say, and now, ladies and gentlemen, as you notice, the elephants are doing the waltz. And you might rhyme in with the music while the music is playing. You might sing something, Tennessee Waltz or something like I don't even remember Tennessee Waltz now, but that's some one of the ones
I
used to sing.
You used to actually sing it?
Yeah, right over the mic, sing it while the elephants are going into the waltz, you know, round and round, turning. Uh-huh. And the White Cloud family, I'd say something like, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we ask you to remain silent and in your seats, please, because what we're about to bring out to you, there's going to be knife throwing, hatchet throwing, bow and arrow shooting, and we do not want no children to come running across in front of a bow and arrow and getting hit. So please remain in your seats. If you have to go to the bathroom, stay on the inside of the rope going out. Don't come towards the center of the ring." And ladies and gentlemen, here they are from Salamanca, New York, the White Cloud family. And then the White Cloud family would come in and throw bow and arrows. And then on that act, they was always demanding that you don't say nothing about the act until he puts Prince's Shining Star on the Wheel of Death. And then when he's strapping her to that Wheel of Death, it goes, you would say, I'd say something like, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, really, we ask you to remain silent, because what the next act is about to do, Prince Chi-Chi, as you notice, is placing Prince's Shining Star on the Wheel of Death. Now, this wheel spins at 42 miles per hour. You're going to see Prince Chi-Chi throwing 9 knives in 9 seconds and outlining the body, the beautiful body of Princess Shining Star." And she would be strapped and the wheel would start turning, and she'd going up and down, her hair hitting the ground. And then he would stand back and he'd throw them damn knives, you know, 9 of them. Actually, he threw them faster than 9 seconds. But by the time the wheel stopped, she'd let standing there, and a knife here on the side of her head, down under her arms, all the way down her body, and 2 of them up in between her legs. And one above her head. And her head, a lot of times he would pin her hair right to the Wheel of Death. Uh-huh. And one time he stuck her in the arm under here. It wasn't in the arm, under here. He miscalculated, and he stuck her there.
What happened then?
When something like that happens, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of times with circuses in the show business, we do have accidents, and what you just witnessed is one of the unfortunate accidents we have. Prince Chi-Chi, take her on out the back door, and he would take her out. She was all right. She just got stuck, you know. And, of course, she's got scars all over where she's been stuck practicing, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That's a dangerous act.
Yeah, it really
And then after the act, I would announce, "Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we ask that none of your children attempt something like this. Don't go home and attempt something like this, because that act was very dangerous, as you've seen." And then you go into the next act, the segrero, not a trapeze.
How'd you do the trapeze one?
Well, see, like in announcing the shows, it's all introduction, or introducing the actor to the public, the people, and then, all right. "And now, ladies and gentlemen, coming to you all the way from Puerto Rico, we have the great segrero and the segrero family." And then segrero, Donna, and the great segrero would come out, and Donna would be down on the ground doing a rollabola with her son act, and he would be climbing up on the to the trapeze. And then when he gets up there, he would be up there and he would take a bow and all this, you know, and then she's done with the rollabola, and then she would step out and watch her husband and hold the line, you know, for him. And he would go out and do the trapeze act. And then the next thing I would say is, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, the great segrero, what you're about to see now is a very difficult act. It's called the spin of death. That's where the trapeze is twisted around and around, and the chain is wrapped. And when the segrero pulls this release cable, he would be standing on his head, his hands and feet standing out, and he would jerk that cable. No, she would do that on the ground. That's when she pulls that. And he's upside down on his head, and this trapeze would start spinning, and then it would get going, and he's out like this, you know. And then when the act was over, he would flip over, swing up, and take a bow. How about it, ladies and gentlemen, for the great segrero?" And then he would come sliding down, out they go.
Did Bartok ever want to be the ringmaster? Was he ever the ringmaster?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was ringmaster before when I took it. Yeah.
Yeah. Teach you how to do it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You have a good voice for it. You have a real loud, booming.
Yeah, you learn that in the circus, carnival, how to throw the voice, you know. Uh-huh. How to talk out of your stomach. And, "Hey, here you go. Uh-huh. See, you're not talking with the voice box. Uh-huh. When you're throwing your voice out like that, you're throwing it out of your stomach. Uh-huh. Hey, I got a teddy bear for your love affair and a snake for your date. Hey, I got a teddy bear for your love affair and a snake for your date. You see the difference?
Yeah.
Love affair. Love affair.
But when you're on those games, you're really throwing your voice.
Yeah, you throw it out to the people. That way, people three games down can hear you, you know, can hear you screaming and yelling and talking. So they look and, what the hell is this guy down? This is crazy. Look at that crazy guy. Look at him. He's out there on top of that damn awning. Look at this. And I would go out there and break a light bulb or these cotton balls. Now, I don't eat fire, but I would light these cotton balls with a match and drop them down my mouth. Well, that ain't nothing, throwing a cotton ball full of fire down in your mouth, you know. And people would see that. And then I would jump off the awning up there on that awning. I would jump off. What you just seen is well worth 50 cents to play the game. Come here. Sport, come here a minute, damn. Don't you walk away from me. I'll slap the hell out of you. Come here, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they start laughing. Pretty soon you got him up. So now you blow an animal to him. You let him win one. You know, he wins one. Now you got a hell of a crowd out here. Pretty soon, bucks start. Yeah, come on over here. I know she's worth 50 cents to you. That's it. Give me 50 cents, damn it. I'd put it down in the apron, you know, or in my pocket. I never hardly wore an apron in a game. Everybody wanted their agents to wear an apron. To me, I didn't like an apron.
I worked out. So you have put money in them, right? That's where you kept your money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People would come and untie them, jerk them, and run with them, you know. Oh, I always work out of my pockets. I can reach in there and pull that money out and count it off. Keener, when I first started with him in 1969, he wanted me to wear an apron. I told him, no way, I ain't wearing no damn apron. If you want to wear an apron and run the game, Bob, go ahead. You're thinking, make it, go ahead, goddamn. The first day I worked for him, and within about an hour and a half, I took him $60. He come by and he says, hey, you're doing pretty good. I seen a big tip over here a while ago. Yeah, how much you got in? I said, oh, hell, I thought at the time about $70, but it was 60-some dollar. He said, oh, well, give me all of it except keep $5 and change. I told him then, I said, Bob, let me tell you something. If you're going to come around here every hour or two and collect my money, it don't work with me. That's the first week I knew the man. It don't work for me. Now, either you trust me and I trust you, or we just can't work together. I'm not going to steal a penny from you, and I don't expect you to steal anything from me. And that's how I was just like it is. He says, well, I collect money all the time from the agents, and I said, well, not from me. Now, at the end of the night, me and you both count the money together. And that's the first week or so, and then after that, he got to where I wouldn't even count it with him. He'd just take the money and go on his camper. Because the man's so damn honest. That's the thing about Bob Keener. He was so honest. If you had, for the day's take, for, say, on a hanky-pank game, I had a $450.50, he would never mark it 50 cents. He'd make it another dollar. You know what I mean? If I had $450.25, he'd take the quarter. Oh. But if it's 50 cents or 75 cents, he'd mark up another dollar. At the time, I was getting 25% of what I was taking in. Mm-hmm. If I took in 450, I made 100 and some dollars for myself mm-hmm. on the game.
Yeah, so you could make quite a lot of money doing it. What did you do when you in a hanky-pank game when somebody was really good, got really good at one of those games?
You got a little sign there that says limit two per day.
Oh, really?
If they, like, if they know how to throw darts, stand there and throw them darts right and hit them cards. Hey, you got two of them, buddy. That's your limit for the day. Come back tomorrow. I tell you what, come back in about an hour, it'll be a new day, you know? The guy stood there with two of them right off the bat. Come back in about an hour, be a new day, you know? That's what I would tell them.
Would they come back?
Oh, yeah. Hey, can I play again? Ah, yeah, things kind of slow. Come on. But then he gets up there, start throwing them darts and balls or whatever it is, like he, you know, like he did before. Hey, watch this now. Watch this guy. Don't you miss it now! And I would be swinging my arms out in front of him. He's standing there trying to, you know, ah, there he goes! And by the time I get done screaming, and hell, I've got a lot of people out there watching this guy, you know. He might stand there $15 worth of darts, throwing 50 cents a dart, because I'm making him nervous. It's like on a cat rack. The guy says, "Hey, man, you keep quiet. Don't say nothing. Don't scream in my ear. Don't say nothing." I won't say nothing. I just stand there and take one of the balls up and stand there and throw the ball up and down and catch it. Just as he gets ready to throw, I throw the ball up. It distracts him. And they're liable to say, "Hey, will you quit tossing the damn ball and keep your mouth shut?" That many people got mad at me. I would scream and I call them, "Kai, my grandmother throws better than that, you hog slopper, or you chicken farmer," and cuss them, raise hell. I got a drunk one time in Lancaster, Ohio, and some bitch sucker punched me. He did. He told me, he said, "If I miss this next one, I'm going to bust you right in your face." Well, hell, I thought he was kidding, you know. Now, he wasn't kidding. He threw the damn ball, man, and he missed that damn fuzzy cat. And when he threw it, he went over the counter. I'd be damned if he didn't come off and hit me square in my damn face. Knocked me down. I jumped up. By the time I jumped up, hell, there was all kind of carnage, you know, on his butt. And they didn't, it was like a hey roo, man. You don't walk out there and hit one of them carnies. You got every carny out there to whip. And especially when you got a drunk like he was up there. All the other carnies are watching you anyhow, because hell, they ain't getting no business anyhow. I'm up there screaming, and I got all the people standing out in front of my damn game. And so they're all watching you, you know. And so when that happened, shit, the time I got up off the ground, there was all kind of carnies on him, had him bent over the counter, a couple of them hit him and everything else, but the guy was drunk, you know. I felt like hitting him myself, you know. But that's when Bob Keener come over, "All right, break it up. What the hell are you hitting a guy?" He tell him the drunk, "What the hell you hit him for?" I told him I was going to hit him, God damn it. "Who the hell is all these goddamn guys?" I said, "The carnies, man." "You guys stick together, don't you?" Things like, yeah, you know.
Who do you think, are there certain people that are just known for being great pitchmen, great markers around Gibson?
Yeah, Ward Hall's a damn good pitch man himself. He lives right down the street here.
He's away, I think, now.
Yeah, he's out on the road now. Yeah, I got his house. I got carny people's houses that I watch at night. Mm-hmm. I check on them once or twice a night.
Really?
Yeah. I just had a burglary down on Bob Strasburg's place.
Because they're away all the whole season, so.
Yeah, they're gone all summer. And for the last 2 years, I've been watching carny's houses. And for the last 2 years, I ain't had one house get broken into until this year. Strasburg's down here.
Really?
It's the only house.
They don't have alarms or anything like
no,
that?
No, he don't. He's got a beautiful place right down around the corner. But he's got inch and a half steel frames on his windows. It covers his windows. You can't even see out or in of the house. Mm-hmm. And they went in there and took crowbar and tore an inch and a half. Well, they took the whole window frame and all completely.